Yeah. Just listen.
Okay. Hi, I'm Wendy Mayberry. I'm really cool. You should just listen. Just hit play. Just keep going. Just hit go. It's a good one.
Yeah.
Don't skip this one. There
you go. Don't. Yeah. This is a podcast you do not want to miss.
Yeah. This is a must play on today. If you listen to one podcast, make it this one. It's Wendy Mayberry.
All aboard. Next stop, adventure. This is Excelsior. She would have never gotten a job in radio if this was 1947. If this was 1947, she would have been a terrible secretary. It's Brittany!
And let's go. Hi, Wendy.
Hello.
How's it going?
Groovy. I'm excited to be in your home for the first time.
I know. Welcome to my home, my little messy home studio.
I wouldn't imagine Joe Coccozello could live in such a nice place.
Yeah, well.
He married up.
I don't know about that.
I do. I've known him for many years. He totally married up.
That's my assessment. Oh, okay. I love it. Thank you.
He always has sounded like he's 70 years old, even 20 years ago. So, like, I think he's... Don't you think he sounds like an old guy?
Yes. Yeah. Who is the guy that he sounds like? There's actually some 70-year-old that he sounds like.
Yeah, I would believe that. Yeah. A 70-year-old guy from Long Island that's mad that his shorts are pulled up right under his nipples, and he's like, why are you on my lawn? You know, and his socks are up.
That's so true.
Yeah. I played softball. Actually, it was funny because we did this comedian softball game way back in the day that no one does anymore, and Joe was there, and he was wearing long sleeve shirts and long pants, and it was hot.
Yeah,
that sounds like him. How are you? I don't think he has a lot of body fat, is my guess.
Yeah, it's been a real issue.
Yeah.
The sleeping
situation. The temperature.
Because I like to sleep ice cold.
Me too.
And I wake up sweating and he's like, I'm so cold. I'm like...
Is he a vampire? You can tell
us. I think so.
Is he actually that old?
As a woman and a mothering soul, he's low on iron, I think.
Oh, yeah. He could be.
Yeah, that's my guess.
I had to get an iron infusion this year, so I am well equipped
with
iron.
You're a ginger.
Yeah.
That's not uncommon.
Very pale skin.
Yep.
I'm like a waif, sort of. Like, not really built for hot weather.
Yeah.
I'm made to live in a cloudy, delicate country.
Yeah, yeah. Are you Norwegian, Irish?
My son, it's so funny, that DNA thing, right? Because you're like, oh, I don't want him to have my DNA. So I put my son in there to see what I have through him. Right, so I didn't hawk my DNA. I hogged my son, who can't give a consent, his DNA to see what was in there. And my parents have done it. So I've seen, you know, both sides.
Yeah.
So my dad is 35% Italian, but everything else is like Irish, English, Scottish.
It's
kind of like that. The whitest white people.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, you can't tell, but I have a redhead complexion. I'm the only one with red hair in my family.
Oh, and really?
Yeah. So they're like, where did she
Mailman's
come from?
Child.
Yeah. But then they looked into our, I think it may have been, I don't know, somebody, some cousin found out that we have Irish back in our family.
Back in the day.
Somebody was messing around. And then
those recessive genes will pop up when you least expect them.
I know. And here I am, the messing around part. The genes.
We actually, I have cousins. So I have that American thing where, you know, people are always like, oh, we have Native American blood. And I have a grandmother who is really dark skinned, straight black hair.
Oh.
And my cousins all have features that you would typically associate with Native Americans.
Yeah.
And when my mom did her 23andMe, it had nothing. And I'm like, are we those Southerners that have told everyone that we've got part Cherokee and we haven't?
Oh my gosh.
It was all before I got here, so I'm not sure.
That's right. You're Southern. You're where are you from again?
My mom's from Alabama.
Oh.
So I always say that wherever your mom's from is kind of like your upbringing, because she does it the way she brought up. But my dad was in the military, so I was actually made in Japan, and we kind of lived all over the U.S. So every time we went to a family gathering, it was in Alabama.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
So you were made in Japan.
Made in Japan, just like all good electronics.
You should get like a little tattoo on your
foot.
I thought
about that. Or a barcode.
Your barcode,
you know?
Yeah.
I've had that thought for a while.
That'd be so funny.
Be fun. Yeah.
That's so cool. Now you didn't live in Japan at all. You were born there. You did. Okay.
I did. I lived there when I was a little kid, and then we moved back to the States. But I went to kindergarten in the States, so it was just all my little baby years, which you don't think are very significant until you hang out with a 3 or 4 year old and realize how much they're already getting of the world.
Yeah.
So yeah, we moved to the States then, and then we moved to New Mexico, which is like the opposite of Japan as far as no one's speaking Japanese. You know? And then we moved to Virginia, and I had my most of my years in Virginia.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. You like Virginia?
I loved it. Wait. Because it's right there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love the map here. So we can be like, okay, over here. And then you were over here, right? Is that New Mexico?
New Mexico, right there, the red one.
Yep.
And then I went to Virginia. And then I went to, I went to college in Massachusetts. I went to grad school in Massachusetts. Then I lived in New York City. Then I lived in LA. Then I lived in Alabama a little bit, in Georgia a little bit. And then I moved to Minnesota. And then Wisconsin. I lived like 9 states as an adult. I move around a lot.
That's so cool. And then why Minnesota?
Well, that was really funny. I actually saw a pet psychic in California. This is the most dumbest.
If you're poor,
if you're poor, you don't go to a people psychic. You go to a pet psychic, and then you kind of go, well, can you tell anything about me? Like, it's so stupid. So my girlfriend was like, oh, I know this pet psychic. And I'm like,
what?
And she just sort of said to me, you're going to live in Minnesota. And I went, I'd never been to Minnesota. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she goes, the one in the middle at the top of the Mississippi River. And we literally had to go look because we'd never be like, that is Minnesota. I'm like, I'm never going to be in Minnesota ever. And so what happened was I was in St. Jude's Hospital in Tennessee, in Memphis. They treat kids with cancer. So I went to the hospital to photograph the kids that have cancer that can't leave the hospital for Christmas.
Yeah.
And they have a thing called Target House, which is where Target pays for the people to live while your kid's getting cancer treatment. It's very cool. They give you all the bedding, all the furniture, all the... Because if your kid has cancer and has to go live in a different state, it's very hard to get an apartment and furnish it. And
yeah.
So Target is all that for free. They live there as long as they need to. Everything's paid for by Target. Yay, Target.
Like Target?
Yeah.
Wow.
Target Corporation. It's one of the things they do that no one really knows about. But they do the Ronald McDonald House. You've heard of that? Mm-hmm. That's for kids with less than 30 days in the hospital. But if you have more than 30 days, you go to Target House. And Target House is for long term. Anyway, they paid for us to come take Christmas pictures of all of the children who couldn't leave the hospital. And there I met a guy who worked at the corporate office in Minnesota. And he was like, oh my gosh, you need to come move to Minnesota. And I was like, sure, that sounds like fun. And I went up there for the first time in July, and it was beautiful because I'm from the South. So our July in Minnesota is balmy.
Is this guy Ryan?
No, that's...
Okay, I was just curious. No, okay.
No, Ryan was... are you about my kid's dad?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that didn't... No, that guy wasn't high enough on the food chain. Anyway, but yeah, so... it was beautiful, and I moved there, and then 6 weeks later, it was, like, winter, and I'm like, oh, my God, what have I done?
Yeah.
So, it was fun. Yeah, so that's how I got here, and then I swiped right on Tinder and ended up in Wisconsin.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, wait, so this was a person that you were, like, dating, right, in Target, or so, no?
Well, I did date a guy that I worked with.
Okay.
And I made a baby with him, and then we worked, yeah, and that didn't happen anymore, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so when you got here, you were like, oh, I'm going to stay here for a minute.
Yeah, just for a minute. I live downtown at a really cool, you know when you're a little girl and you have a vision of where you want to live when you grow up? So yeah. I had this, like, it was an exposed brick loft. It's by the Minnesota Book Arts Museum on Washington Street.
Oh,
and
cool.
And it had arched windows, and it was a loft, and it was just, like, super cool girl in the city with a balcony, and, you know. So and it was right next to Grumpy's and Acme, so I thought, I don't have an excuse not to do comedy.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was cool. So I lived there, and then at the weirdest time, it all happened at the same time, I decided to move out of the apartment, buy a house, and found out I was got pregnant all in, like, 1 month.
Wow.
Yeah.
So then, that's a lot.
It was weird. I actually bought the house across the street from a playground, and I had found out that I couldn't have children is what the doctor had told me. And so my friends were like, are you going to kidnap a baby at this playground?
Gosh.
Like, why are you moving across the street from a playground? I'm like, I don't know. And then before I closed on the house, I found out I got pregnant. So it was very cool.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
Yeah. It all took a lot of twisty turns.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then that relationship ended, and I typically, when relationships end, I'll just move across the country.
Yeah.
And just haul off. You know, like I moved from New York to California and then to Alabama to Minnesota.
Yeah. So, like, it's time to go.
Yeah. I'm out. You know, and I do a big dramatic, you know, several states. But I had a baby at that point with a dude, so I only moved to Wisconsin.
Oh, that's actually pretty much another country.
It feels like another country. You have to get your passport stamped for sure.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, I didn't know Minnesota could be drunker, and it's Wisconsin. I had no idea.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And doesn't it feel like Wisconsin should be west of Minnesota? Because it's a wild, wild west. It's weird that it's east of Minnesota.
Yeah.
Because I associate the East Coast with more finery and the west with a little bit wild. And Minnesota, Wisconsin seem opposite to me.
Like, I know.
Minnesota is more eastern and Wisconsin's more like the Dakotas, but that's just me.
I know, it's weird, but I think it's just because more Germans settled than Wisconsin.
Maybe, and it's very rural. You know, we're making lots of milk out there.
Yeah. And yeah, so we're in Wisconsin.
Just right. I can see Minnesota from my house. It's just 5 minutes away. It's in St. Croix Falls, which is right on the border of the St. Croix River. It's actually really lovely.
I was going to say, that sounds gorgeous.
It is. It's just an hour from the cities, and it's easy to get back and forth for work, for comedy, and it's beautiful, and we have a bear in our backyard.
And you live there now?
Mm-hmm. Oh. I bought a house there, so that's where I came from this morning.
Oh, my gosh. That's so pretty.
I like it. Grayson can walk to school.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
I lived in Wisconsin. But that was more in Nina by Appleton Oshkosh, bit deeper in.
That's quite deep for me.
So yeah, that's not a hop and a skip for comedy.
So we get everything done in Minneapolis, which is funny because when they want to do like telehealth appointments, they're like, "Are you in Minnesota?" And you're like, "Yes." They're like, "Are you calling from a car inside Minnesota?" And we go, because you really have to drive over the bridge and then you're in Minnesota,
right?
And during COVID, I would do it because somehow I guess I thought it made a difference. You know, I would go like, I drove over the bridge, I'm in Minnesota. But now I'm just like, sure, I'm in Minnesota.
Did they really?
Oh, yeah.
Wait, what?
Because physicians, this is terrible, I'm outing myself probably, but physicians, psychologists, everyone's licensed in the state they live in.
Okay.
So even though we don't live near a major metropolitan area, so we get all of our services out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, we have to say that we are parked and having a phone call from Minnesota for them to talk to us.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I've never heard that. That's
like the U. If you get anything from the U, you've got to tell them, yes, I'm calling from Minnesota.
Oh my gosh. That's so weird because now you could try to get the good stuff and you could be in like Washington. Just telehealth.
Hi. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm here.
Yeah, sure.
What's that mountain in the background?
I don't know. Shut the way up. Yeah, exactly. Or it looks like you're in a house. Whose house are you in? Yeah. The neighbors?
Yeah, so. It's crazy.
It's weird. It just started during COVID. You know, we used to, you would always go to doctor visits, right? Like you'd go now that you can do them on telehealth. So
I still think I should get some syrups and like a laptop and go see my gyno. And just
that's
like
hilarious.
A nice light. And be like, all right, guys.
What do you think? Can we move it over a little bit? Yeah. Well, it's so funny because I had pink eye the other day and they were like, take pictures of your eye and upload them. Like, it's wild.
I know.
And I loved my doctor. She was so funny. She was a black lady and her name came up and she's clearly from Africa and it was lots of syllables. And I immediately went like, I don't know how to start pronouncing that. Like my brain went into panic mode. And then she got in there and she goes, hi, you can call me Dee Dee. I'm like, oh,
okay.
I love you.
Oh.
Clearly this is a common reaction to your 30 letter name, you know. And she was so cool and she goes, oh mama, look at your eyes, you look terrible. I'm like, I feel terrible. And she was really sweet. She kept calling me mama instead of my name, and she goes, oh baby, I'll give you some drugs. And I'm like, I was thinking, please don't let some corporate health person talk you out of your amazing bedside manner,
right?
Because I'm sure somebody would be like, we don't really call patients baby and mama. But I loved it because I felt like crap, and it felt like having a friend be like, oh,
I know, I want that.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
I know, we should be more like that. Hey, who snuck in here?
The dog just came in.
The dog team.
It's funny because I was thinking, it's like, you know how Uber drivers, you can pay extra for it to be a quiet Uber?
Yeah.
I feel like you should be able to add a surcharge for the doctor for them to like love on you a little bit. Yeah.
Like baby you.
To baby you.
Yeah.
You look so sick. Do you want extra drugs?
Aww.
Yes, I do.
Yes. So. That's so funny. Speaking of baby, I don't know why this makes me laugh. I had a friend who's dating like a foreign guy.
Yeah.
And he was learning English through her. And they actually got married. But so she was like teaching him and stuff. And he meets his mom for the first time. He copies her. So she calls all her friends. Hey, baby. Hey, baby. He meets the mom. He goes, hey baby. Like thinking it's just a normal greeting. And
she's
her mom's like
no.
What?
That's awesome.
I know. I think that's really funny. Oh, okay. Okay.
So are these your babies or Joe's babies?
So this one was mine.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was Joe's. And now we're just one big little
happy family.
Happy dog family.
Did they get along well when you first met?
So my dog's super chill. She loves most dogs. But she hates all dogs. So it was a really rough beginning. Like this one just telling this one what to do. And now they're best friends.
Sure.
Now, yeah. So we had to work it out.
She's very cute. They're very soft.
I know.
Hello.
That's all the omegas I give them.
My son wants to have a dog really bad.
Aww.
But I travel a lot, so.
I know. It's hard.
Yeah.
And, yeah, especially because when I got her, I was just a single woman, and I took her everywhere. And now she's like, why am I home all the time? Yeah. Why do I have to stay home all the time with this dog? But I think she's okay.
Is she good in the car?
Weirdly, she's been in the car. We've traveled long road trips, and she hates it. It's so weird. Since she was a puppy, 10 weeks old, but now she just hates it.
My cat does a lot of yowling. If she has to go on any car trip, yeah, she'll make a very...
Cats don't like to be moved anywhere, really. Mm-hmm. They're very territorial.
Yeah, if you try and move her, like if I tried to put a collar on her, which is a very dumb, she became a boneless chicken breast. She was like, you can take me for a drag. Oh, my dog. The dog's walking on the camera.
Scoot out. Okay, maybe Momo, you're kind of distracting. Why don't you leave? Get out of here. Get.
Her little, just for the audience, her ears are like, me?
I know, she's looking at us. Can we get the girls out?
Let's go outside. Let's go.
Ooh.
Come on, let's
Ooh.
Go outside.
Come on, Nellie's Anna. Good.
She's like, all right.
She's so cozy.
That's such a nice invite, too. Hey, you want to go outside?
I know,
yes,
right?
I do.
Yes.
She's like, oh, I just wanted to hang out with
she's
the ladies.
She's usually the one, yeah.
She's like, we're having a meeting.
I know, she used to be in all my podcasts, but again, now it's like, yeah. Ugh.
She gave me the look of like, shut the fucking door. Do you not see the red lights on?
I know, that's like, exactly.
Don't you know how this works?
I don't have headphones, but I don't need them because I have epic dog ears.
Yeah, that's like,
right,
cute,
that's
yeah.
true. The sound is amazing in this room.
Yeah, I know. I wish we need to pad it a little bit because
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it works.
It's fine. It's ambience.
My last studio, I had a studio space in a music studio mm-hmm. kind of space. So I never knew if the neighbors were going to go practice. So it would be like background sounds of people playing constantly.
I kind of like that. Did you like it?
Sometimes, yes. But sometimes it was pretty aggressive where yeah. I had to go. I'm like, I'm sorry. This is pretty loud, but no.
Were they sucking pretty hard? It's like, I need you to get better before you play during
some
my recording.
Some people, yes. Yeah. Some people. And then others. Yeah. And others, I kind of feel bad. I'm like, I'm kind of just recorded their new song. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of, I wonder if you would ever get like the digital rights management people to be like,
yeah,
you know, like it's in the background, like you use that track unauthorized. And it was like, they were ambient noise, man.
I know. It was, you're in a public, you're in a space that we all pay for. Like, I mean, I don't know. I didn't sign anything saying I couldn't record. In
exactly.
fact, they know what I'm doing in here. So yeah. Anyways, this is a lot quieter. Of
really good.
But yeah. So comedy.
Yeah.
And photography.
Yes.
What else do you do?
Is that it? Oh, that's the big things. And then weirdly in the pandemic I got into a decluttering thing. I don't know if you heard about that, but I fell into like a
You might be able to help.
I'm not judgmental at all.
No, I'm saying you may be able to help.
Okay, so sometimes you walk in, people go like, don't look, and I'm like,
girl. Please look, because I need your opinion. but yeah, we're actually in the process again. It's funny because this side used to be Joe's desk, like all the way across here up until mm-hmm. yesterday. We decided to move everything, so he has his own office.
Nice.
And this will be my own office.
Very nice.
I'm excited.
That is really cool. Are you going to change the color or keep it the same? Or
keep it the same. Yeah. Yes. But I have stuff in the basement, like my art stuff that I'd like to put here, so I can have more of my art stuff in
nice.
My office. So anyways.
Yeah. So during the pandemic, everyone was staying home, right? And I figured out that I was super duper cluttered. And clutter is super fascinating. I use super twice. Because it's related to trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times loss, like if you lose something, you don't want to lose more things. You start keeping, like holding on to everything.
Yeah.
And so I started studying, I think I got certified in 3 different methods for decluttering.
Wow.
Because it was the pandemic and what else are you going to do? And I...
So you got certified.
Oh, yeah, to be like a clutter coach.
I love this.
And it's hilarious because if you knew me in real life, you would say, how is that possible? Because I have a lot of stuff.
Yeah. You're an artist. Of course you do.
Yeah, and you keep it because you have these... So we talk a lot about the aspirational joy of buying art supplies.
Yeah.
So you love to buy the supplies, but you might actually reuse them. But you don't want to throw them away because there's potential. So sometimes mm-hmm. you like being the person that buys art supplies, and then that's actually sort of a collection.
Yeah.
So the rule of thumb for those of you that are interested in clutter is you're allowed to have whatever you want as long as you have space for it.
Yeah.
So once you've run out of space, then you have to start thinking, does everything I have support the life I have today? Because mm-hmm. a lot of times you have stuff that is not part of your life anymore. Or we always joke about like the Wendy that could have been. Like you buy stuff for the person you might have become, but you never actually became that person. So now we can just let that thing go. So
Yeah, no, this is your words are like soothing to me because clutter gives me anxiety and yeah. I have to constantly think, this was something I used a couple years ago. I don't need it, or this memory is not really doing anything for me.
Yeah, it doesn't bring you joy.
Or, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I love this, and I'm trying to teach somebody else how to do this.
So what's interesting is usually one person in marriage is good with clutter, and one person has a problem with clutter. Yes. Very rarely do two people of the same type marry each other. So usually there is friction there. And then you absolutely hit it. One of our rules of thumb is if you can replace it in 20 minutes for less than $20, if you needed it again, just get rid of it. And that might sound like financially irresponsible, but the reality is everything costs money to stay in your space because it's costing.
Yep.
Yeah. So you're paying anyway.
So it's like you're a slave to your stuff. That's what I always think. Like I do not want to be a slave to my stuff because, yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, because upkeep of it and the management of it and if it breaks.
Awesome.
And the other thing, too, that I think people forget is you really can't keep as much stuff as you think you can. Mm-hmm. Because even if you have it in a garage, little critters get in there or the box disintegrates or it's wet, it can flood, it gets mold. And mm-hmm. you just can't keep everything, even if you want to. And the other thing is you can't declutter memories. So, unfortunately, I mean, people wish they could declutter memories.
I always say I keep them in my head.
Mm-hmm. So even if you get rid of the ups. Like, so the other problem in America is, this is interesting, is we were raised with people that actually went through lack in the Depression. So this could be the last koosh ball that ever existed. And mm-hmm. We kind of taught down in the generations in America, if you don't use everything within an inch of its useful life, you're ungrateful for all the things in your life. Like, oh, you should show gratitude by just holding on to this half-broken thing because your great-grandmother brought it over from so-and-so. Right. So it's a lot of, like, you get this clutter with a layer of guilt, especially if your great-grandmother has died and now all you have is this broken plate she brought from Lithuania.
Yep.
You know, that doesn't fit in your cabinet, doesn't fit your decor.
Kills me. I have a lot of stuff for guilt.
Yeah, then just let it go. Because you imagine that if you died in a car accident tomorrow, would somebody go, that birdhouse on the shelf, if we get rid of it, Brittley will think we never loved her. It's like, no.
Yeah, whoa. So,
yeah, it's very strange. So it's a lot of layers to clutter. So it's a fascinating topic for me. So I've been helping people. I do in-home clutter coaching.
Oh.
And then I take all your stuff that you want to donate. I donate it for you because the other thing that happens is you put it in a pile and then it stays in the pile and you never take it to the place.
That is great. Yeah, I love that.
I take it for you and put it there.
So. That's so nice.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty bad if two people get married and they're both clutter, though. Because I think that starts to become a problem.
Well, I think. I've never been married. Okay. So I don't know. I have lots of theories about marriage. It seems like sometimes we marry people who challenge our worst traits to make you better. But mm-hmm. sometimes we marry people that will allow us to keep our bad habits because mm-hmm. they're not going to ask you to change.
Yeah.
So even if you have something that needs changing, you find someone that's okay with your decisions.
Yeah.
So. Sometimes clutter, I think two clutter people can be very happy together in their collections sitting in a bunch of clutter.
Yeah.
It's where the problem with that is, like I said, is usually you get critters.
Yeah.
Bugs or mice, or they love clutter. So if you have a cluttered house, a lot of times you'll end up with a rodent problem.
They
can hide
in it. They can do stuff. I know. It's crazy. I always think like 10 steps ahead. Even like if you go in, I just went into a new restaurant. I won't say the name. And it's beautiful. Beautiful. But it has... from like everywhere, just ceilings and on the like wall of fake plants hanging.
Oh,
and
dust.
I'm like, it's beautiful now, but it's going to be disgusting. It's just going to be swaying dust everywhere. How are you going to clean all that?
Yeah.
And it's like stuff like that. Or like the trend of the clouds. Have you seen those?
With the cotton batting or whatever.
I just think of like all the bugs that are in dirt and ugh.
Yeah.
Like it looks cool.
So weirdly, I also worked for Dyson for a while. And Dyson, you had to talk about their air purifiers for that reason because they'll talk about you clean from the top down. So you knock the dust down.
Yep.
And then you vacuum the floor and then you have an air purifier of how you – they're very – I was like, wow, that's you smart. Took it a new level. But the interesting thing is I didn't realize that your inside of your home is more polluted than the outside.
Oh.
Because outside you have wind. And so people oftentimes think the outside is more pollution. But usually in your house you don't have the airflow.
Oh, so I should be wearing a mask inside.
No, you just clean better. But like, are the two, like the other thing that's funny is, this is so weird, but I really am a nerd, so I like to go deep on stuff. So like HEPA filtration is sort of a joke because you can have a HEPA filter, but if it's not sealed, it's like having a HEPA filter in your purse. It doesn't things just go around it.
Yeah.
So almost every single vacuum cleaner will say it's HEPA, has a HEPA filter, but they're not sealed. So it's just like having one hanging in the middle of your room.
Oh my gosh.
You know, it doesn't really get it gone. So anyway, the allergy thing is really interesting. Is once you, I didn't realize how many people are affected by dust and mites and will go to like the hospital every year for breathing problems that would be helped by like air purifiers. So,
wow.
Okay. I know. I just, it was not in my, do you ever find that you meet someone who has a problem you've never thought about and then you go, oh, I didn't even realize.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've had a lot of that as you get older. You're like, yeah. I never thought about people that work on the ocean in like ocean liners bringing containers of stuff over. What a weird life that must be. Like,
right?
Yeah, they're there right now.
I know. So, right now.
Thousands of people are crossing the Atlantic bringing us cheap crap from China.
I know. Is that crazy?
There's
so many things that people do that I don't think about.
Which is why I always joke about at school when they tell kids, like, I think when you're in school, they tell you if you're not a doctor, a teacher, a lawyer, a cop, a, you know, these very, maybe 15 careers. It's like, oh, if you haven't learned math, you can never be this. It's like, dude, there are so many jobs that you would have never thought about in your life.
I know.
So.
I know. It's wild.
Yeah. I think there's something for everyone. So if you have a kid that likes to sleep all day, they can be a Teamster. You can just drive to the movie set, take a nap in your truck, drive home, and get paid a lot of money. Like, there's something for everyone. So
don't despair
if you feel like your personality doesn't jive with your mom's dreams. There's something else out there for you.
Yeah. So. Do you have dreams for your kid?
So it's interesting.
Grayson?
Grayson is his name. He's 9. I really like, one of my main goals as a parent is to fall in love with who he is and not have a lot of expectations.
Yeah.
Other than I want him to be super polite and kind. Those are like
the
base level.
The teachable things.
So yeah, like, I want you to be
beyond that.
Palatable as a human. I don't want you to be a little jerk. But
you don't want to raise a jerk.
No, you don't want to raise a jerk. I don't know what he's going to end up doing, but he's very chill. He's very friendly, kind. He's not super competitive. He's not really interested in, I mean, you know, a lot of children are motivated by being the fastest or the best or the number one. He's cool.
He'll say, really?
Yeah. So like, again, during the pandemic, they had this thing on Facebook where one lady's like, so-and-so has already learned all of his sight words. And I was like, Grayson, this kid's already learned his sight words. And he looked at me and said, well, yeah, he's really smart. Like, it didn't inspire him to learn his sight
to
words.
Be,
it was
yeah.
like, well, yeah, that kid's really smart. Of course he's learned his sight words. I'm like, that backfired. So I don't know what he'll – I think he'll be – and whenever we pretend, I'm like, oh, are you the daddy? He's like, no, I'm the friend. Like, he never pretends to be a dad. He's
always
everybody's buddy.
That's funny.
It is interesting. I don't know. So I don't know. As long as he's – I think he's a good little peep. So
yeah.
As long as he's happy, I'll be fine. I would not be surprised if he ended up being something in the arts.
Yeah.
Probably in a support role.
Cool.
Like a stage manager or something where he like likes to be around art, but I don't know that he wants to be on stage.
Yeah, like take the lead. He's more of like a
lighting designer or somebody that does a support role where you have to be nice and kind and friendly, but not necessarily the prima donna. Maybe who knows what he'll end up doing?
Yeah, who knows?
Drywall something. Who knows what he'll do? I don't think labor is in his. He doesn't seem particularly ambitious when it comes to like fixing things. He doesn't seem to have a really good mechanical ability.
Yeah,
really good imagination though. Who knows?
Which is cool. I love, I'm actually have a fascination with fixing things too. It's so fun. It's accomplishment, like fires up.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I did that. Okay, what next? Let's fix another thing.
So I just read this. My friend wrote a book. I'll tell you about this really fast.
Yes.
His name's John Acuff. This is like his 10th. It'll be a bestseller on the New York Times. All of his books have hit the bestsellers list, but they're all businessy kind of books.
Yeah.
But his book is about goal setting.
Oh, I love goal setting.
Oh my
so
God,
fun.
You will love this book.
Okay.
So it's called
All It Takes
Is a Goal. I think it's by John Acuff. It's not out yet. It'll be out in September, but I was on his launch team. So I got to read it and I have become obsessed with like, it's really good. I can't wait for everyone to read it. But one thing he said is, you know, I have vision boards of like what you want your life to look like.
Yeah.
He says those are really hard for people to do sometimes. So what he likes to do is go back on your greatest hits list. Like what has given you the best feeling so far? Like your best moments.
Yeah.
Right. And so you write down this list and then you figure out if they're accomplishments, experiences, relationships, or objects. Because then when you can figure out what really zings you, you can figure out how to motivate yourself.
Huh.
I'm like, oh, that's so smart. Because, you know, some people really aren't. Like you just said, I fix something and I get that.
Yeah.
That's what made me think of that. Where you're like, okay, so I like achievements.
Yeah.
Brittany likes to launch something and own a company and throw an event that's super successful. And,
yeah.
Right? So if you figure out that's your zing, then when you want to give yourself rewards, you can give yourself those types of experiences rather than saying, I'll get a new car or I'll get a piece of clothing or something.
Yeah, I like that. Because, you know, I don't like stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's really interesting. I always think how people work is always fascinating.
It is cool.
And you can see it in comedy, too. You can see their little brains working in the audience. Mm-hmm. So that's fun.
I know. I love meeting people and, like, seeing how everyone is so different and how, like, some people really just love tech stuff and some people don't. Like, use a pen and paper and do stuff, but they're still creative in a different way. And
I love that you said that, because I think sometimes the platitude is always, oh, people are really the same. No, I think we are wildly different in lots of ways, lots of really amazing ways and some troubling ones. So, yeah, I think if you expect everyone to be the same at the core, you're going to be wildly disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we all have the same thing. We're all going to die someday, right?
Yeah, that's
the one
common
thing we have in common.
That's true. I said that the other day, someone in my family is ill, and they were like, oh, well, are they going to die? And I went, yeah, just like you and me, eventually.
I'm like, that's the only thing that anyone has in common. But
that's
besides
the end game.
That, like, if you, yeah, it's just like, do everything you want to now, because we don't know when that is. But that's a guarantee. That's the only thing we can guarantee.
There's that, what is that? Enjoy yourself. It's later than you think.
Yeah.
I really believe that. You just have no idea how much time you have. So make it count. And I think I started thinking that way in my 20s. I was like, I don't know if we're going to sit. Like, we could sit together four more times and have a conversation, or however many. Or this could be the last time we sit just the two of us together and talk. So I want to really enjoy hanging out with you.
Right? Exactly.
So, yeah. That's a different way to live, for
sure.
It's
crazy. Crazy, crazy. Tell me, what came first? Comedy? Photography?
Oh, photography came. So I always joke that I did tragedy for a long time before I did comedy. I was just, everybody's like, if you had a sad story, I will cry with you.
Ah.
I'm very sympathetic to your problems and worry about your problems with you. I started doing photography in, like, second grade, and I was never the class clown, but I was always the person that was, I always mocked people, not in a mean way, but I love to do accents.
Yeah.
Accents and voices. Oops, sorry. Accents and voices and kind of imitating people for fun. So I would do these comedic-y things, but I always did them to entertain people, to get them to smile for the camera. So they were sort of tied together. And then when I moved to Minnesota, it was so cold and I couldn't make any friends. I'm like, this sucks. So
I heard that Minnesota is hard to make friends at.
Oh, my God. It's the worst.
Yeah.
People are friendly but not warm.
Interesting. Well, see, I grew up here and that's how everybody was. I was always, like, even as a child.
Yeah.
And so everyone has their group of friends that they grew up with, and I don't have that, but it's so interesting.
Yeah, it's the worst. Sorry, I mean, it's probably great if you're in the club, but if you move from here, it's really hard, because you guys are, like, so I'd come to work, and people would go, oh, how was your weekend? I'm like, oh, it's good. What'd you do? I'm like, oh, I went to the farmer's. I go to this farmer's market every Saturday, the farmer's market, blah, blah, blah. And then I'd say, what did you guys do? Oh, we went to the cabin. Where's that? Up north. Where? Oh, on a lake. I'm like, are you guys all in the witness protection program? Like, nobody would ever tell you anything. You know, they were all just sort of like, I was like, I'm not going to come to your lake and go knock door to door and find you. Like,
crazy. And so, I don't know, maybe a lot of people from out of town tell me the same thing.
Yeah.
But I just found out I have a cousin from Norway. So I've had him on a podcast and I was talking to him, and he confirmed that, like, because a lot of us are Norwegians here, that he said that they don't talk to anybody there.
Yeah.
Your neighbor, you will not talk to you. It's respect, not to be mean, but you just give them privacy. They don't really make friends. You just ignore them. You don't say hi. But if you're in the mountains and you're alone and you run into somebody, you say hi. That's when you're allowed to say hi.
It's like my friend from Finland said, if you have a wife of 50 years and they're on their deathbed, then you say, I love you.
Isn't that weird? What? Yeah. Why? What?
Because they just are not expressive.
Oh my goodness.
But I'm from the South, where we say hey to everybody. And we will get in a long conversation at the gas station with a complete stranger.
Yeah.
And legit. Like my cousin, I have a cousin who Facebook Live.
Yeah.
Because he's a preacher and he likes to give out some Jesus love. And so he will go on Facebook Live and talk to unsuspecting strangers about Jesus. And I know. Can you imagine in Minnesota, people be like, oh my God.
I know.
And in Alabama, people will actually talk to him.
Oh my gosh.
Like, well, you know, I did go to church, but then I wasn't real sure about that denomination because I wasn't sure how they felt about 1 Timothy. You know, really? I always thought that 2 Timothy was where it's at. And you're like, what? And it's just, it's a whole different place.
I love it. I love that different places are like, Minnesotans, They're all socially awkward.
Here. Yeah, I would say if you guys had a characteristic, it'd be introverted.
Introverted?
Yeah. Not mean, just quieter.
Yeah, interesting.
Which Wisconsin has been a lot more fun to live in because they are a little bit more friendly than in Minnesota.
They are so friendly. Mm-hmm. I bumped into somebody with a cart and they turned around and said, "Oh, excuse me, I'm so sorry." And I was like, no, I just hit you and I wasn't going to say sorry.
And I wasn't sorry about it either.
Well, I was, but I wasn't going to say it. Right. I don't know, because I'm just used to the city. We just,
it's not something we have to discuss.
It wasn't like a random, but just like a tap and, you know.
It's weird. I do like it here. Like, don't get me wrong, because I can leave. I'm not in jail. Like, I do like it, but it is different. And it's been very... I do find what you just said is people have these friends they grew up with. They like leave to go to college or make babies, and they leave and have a Roma Springer, and then they come back to mate and like make their babies and live here. Yeah. And I will say I do love living here because every time I leave, I feel a little like, am I missing out on 30 minutes of good weather? Because we never get that.
I know. So I love Minnesota, but I guess that again, I grew up here, and I must not see it probably because I live in my own world and I talk to everybody. So I'm like, oh wait. They talk to me. It's like, no, because you initiated it. So I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, yeah.
It's all right. It's fine. It's, you know, I lived in New York City, and I loved that because you knew immediately if they liked you or not.
Yeah.
It was very abrupt. Oh, yeah.
When I was there, I was like, these are my people. Because they would just be, like, standing in line, like, all right, hurry up. You're not done. Okay, go to the back. You don't know what you want. Go to the back. And it's like, oh, I like that kind of attitude.
I did too. And then I moved from New York to LA, and it was during 9/11, after 9/11. And in LA, they were like, we're hiring, but like maybe not for another couple of weeks because the Santa Anas are blowing, and we're just really checking with our chi. And we're going to see if like Mercury's in retrograde because we're going to just see what your sign is. And it was like a bunch of.
I know, you're serious?
Oh, yeah. We looked at our crystals. We're not sure that this is our hiring season.
Oh my God.
We think we're coming into a hiring season maybe in 4 weeks, so just check back. And I'd be like, oh my God, I need a job. Like, it was very stressful. But anyway, I found a job. Actually, this last weekend, I went and photographed the daughter's wedding of my old boss in LA.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and it was really fun. He had a bunch of people from LA there, and
yeah,
it was really fun to kind of see all of them. So, yeah.
I love that. And has photography gotten you to travel a lot at all? Or?
Yeah, I think so. That and both. I love to travel. When I went and did my greatest hits list of things I've done in my life that made me happy, travel is on the top of that list. So I went to the Havasupai tribe in February. I'm going back again in October to photograph the kids there, which is wild. Very I never thought I would do that. And then I went to Connecticut this last weekend, and then I've been to Germany. I've shot weddings in languages I don't speak. Did you ever do that when you shot a wedding? Did you?
Yes. Languages that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's stressful because you're watching the whole time like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but it's fun.
It is fun. Yep. Yeah. There's always some people who can translate, but then if they're not around, I'm like, I have no idea what's happening right now.
Yeah, I'm just photojournalisting it. Yeah. I'm just like taking pictures of what's happening.
It's kind of nice that way, too.
It's like I'm just recording.
I've actually, just recently I photographed a deaf wedding.
And oh, cool. Everyone,
like a lot of their friends were deaf, so there was a lot of like...
Seal noises?
Well, yeah, it was interesting because the communication again. It was also weird because, a girl... a young woman was hired to be the translator, mm-hmm. and she was kind of translating, you know, for me. And trying to get my money from him, and she was kind of like, he was trying to rip me off, and she's just kind of like in the middle of it.
Oh, no.
It was fine. It was just a second. Like, I was like, hey, we're not going to do this at your wedding, so I'm gonna go. We'll talk later. And this is, the whole thing's weird. So it was kind of goofy, though, but... It's don't put that on her.
Yeah, man. That's weird.
I know.
That's so cool. So that's interesting. How do you, how long have you been doing weddings?
Weddings.
Or just photography in general. What did you start being
a photographer? So I started young like you, 6 years old, because my dad bought me my first camera. Mm-hmm. And so I loved it. I took pictures of people, my classroom, like my friends. But I did it more instead of like... getting their attention. I was a little bit more introverted and shy, so I just photojournalism everything, and I'd snapshot. Like, my dad looked at it, he's like, this is what you're gonna do. When he was like, he hung up a picture on the wall, it was just like of his friends that were visiting, and I like secretly took pictures of him doing stuff, and he was like, this.
That's so cool. What kind of camera was it, do you remember?
Oh, honestly, it was disposable cameras, so it wasn't even like you know, manual films. So I didn't get into like film cameras until I was like 15, 16, where you could like do the darkroom in high school.
Right, because you're a lot younger than me. Yeah, I didn't have a choice.
Well, then not a lot, but yeah.
Mm, I don't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's cool. And did you? And so then, what did you do? Did you go to high school for it, or how? How did you took it in high school, and then what did you do?
So for me, photography was. I never really like realized like, oh, I could do this for a living to make money. I just did it honestly because I liked it, and I never really like put a lot of like. I wasn't like, oh, this I'm gonna be the best photographer. I was just like a shy person who enjoyed photographing people, and then I think it was. And then in high school, I did it because, again, I liked it, but I also got to skip class. And I would just bring that pass around. They'd be like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, photographing. Duh. Yeah,
camera
just,
stuff.
Yeah, and I would just skip class. Yeah. But, yeah, and then when I was, like, in college, I was like, oh, I'll just do this. I'll just make money shooting weddings and shooting people. And, yeah, so, yeah.
Okay, all right. I know it's like, but tell me your craziest wedding story. Do you have a crazy wedding story? I always love to hear them.
Yeah, it's actually on a podcast episode. Oh, okay. Too, but well, it's too crazy. It's
okay, like, I'll watch it. Which episode is it? Like, why don't you tell the
people? It was Joe's, actually. It's before we were even dating. It was the awful service. I think I reposted it recently on mine, too.
Okay.
So it's on mine, a couple down. The awful service. Yeah, but it's basically, I was 18. It was my first wedding.
Oh.
They paid me $100. I was only supposed to be there 2 hours. Mm. They convinced me to stay longer. Somebody got in a car accident. The groom did. And I ended up having to drive the entire wedding party in my two-door Saturn, 98 Saturn, and shoved a bunch of bridesmaids in there, squeezing in and like
oh my gosh.
The bride in the front, and drove them around. And then at the time, I worked at Sears Portrait Studio.
Yeah.
So... I had work that afternoon because I was only planning on being there for 2 hours. And then they convinced me to stay longer. And my little shy, excited ass, because I was like, oh, it's my first wedding. Okay, I'll stay longer. Called into work. And then right after that, they're like, oh, yeah, we have an appointment for more photos at Sears Portrait Studio. I was like, can you drive us there? Because they didn't have a car. Because the car got in an accident, so that was their only vehicle, and until the limo came later. So
did
later,
you drive them to your job?
Drove them to my job that I just lied and told them I was sick. And so I had to sit in the car in the middle of summer, sweating my labia off, like, no AC, and I was sitting outside with the windows down because I couldn't come in because I get fired. Not making
money. You could have made money.
Right. I could have been shooting and making more money anyways. And so I hid in the car, and, yeah, that was so crazy.
That is so funny. I'm sorry I had not listened to that episode. That's a good story.
Yeah, so, but it gets crazier and, yeah, just listen. But that's how it started. It was crazy. I mean, but there's a lot of, oh my God, you know, right?
Oh, yeah.
Weddings can be nuts. How about you?
I have two that I always tell. It was an Israeli Jewish guy marrying a Puerto Rican girl. And I bring that up because they had very intensely spicy families. So she had like four sisters.
Yeah.
And I was the assistant photographer. Thank God I was not the real photographer. I was just holding a reflector, man. I got nothing to do with this. And he was an agent in LA. So at their wedding were some Hollywood celebrities I was very excited to meet. And so his family from Israel, one of his cousins from Israel wanted to be a bridesmaid, and the bride had those four sisters, and she was like, I'm already filled up with bridesmaids. No. But the groom's mother connived with the designer to make a dress for this girl from Israel that the bride had never met so that she could crash the wedding party and be a bridesmaid, and also had her bouquet made by the florist. Oh my gosh. She got the florist and the designer to make this extra stuff for this girl that the bride didn't want in the color that the maid of honor's dress was in. So everybody was in green except for the maid of honor's in pink. And now this girl from Israel that no one's met is also in pink.
Mm. Oh, my gosh.
So the bride says to the photographer, hey, I don't want this lady in the pictures. And the photographer said, okay, what she should have done, now I know because we both shot enough, is you pose her at the end. And you pose her just a little bit away. And then you just slice her off. And everybody's happy, right? So she gets her picture with everybody, and the bride and groom get one where she's not there. But the photographer made the mistake of, when the girl jumped into the pictures, walked up to the bride who's standing next to the groom, the groom's sister, and the groom's mother. Hey, that girl you didn't want in the wedding is in this picture. What do you want me to do? So the groom says, just a minute. And he takes one step away, like one step away from us toward the back, and just lights into the bride. You're a selfish bee. How can you be such a jerk? You're such a C-word. Like, you know, and the sister of the groom goes like, F you. And the sister of the bride goes like, screw you guys. And the groom's mother comes in like, everybody's screaming.
Oh my gosh. And oh my gosh.
It was like the biggest fight I've ever seen. He literally called her a selfish bee and a stupid C-word. I remember those specifically. And then she then tears off and goes to the room and flails herself on the bed. And then the rabbi comes in, the groom comes in. And I think that the groom is now going to figure out that he should apologize. Instead, he lights into her somewhere. He goes, yeah, just lay there and cry like a stupid baby. And I'm like, oh, don't marry him. Like,
no.
And so he turns to the rabbi says, you're being horrible. And he tells the rabbi to F off. And the rabbi throws her hands up and just walks like, I'm out. And I'm like, oh my God. Turns out that he was friends with the rabbi. It wasn't like.
Okay.
Like he knew
but
her.
That's still like.
Still, that's your rabbi. So anyway, when they finally got their act together, they got married 45 minutes late. The string quartet, this is at the Beverly Hills Hotel in LA. Okay, like the sunset. It's like
Sorry, this is crazy.
Yeah. They're playing music for like an extra 45 minutes and no one has clued them in why. They're just sitting there like going, oh, let's play Green Sleeves again. It was awful. So then the rabbi.
We only had a small set list.
It's only supposed to be for 10 minutes or something. So when the rabbi comes out and marries them, she just goes deep for like, you need to quit your childish ways and cling to your wife and let go of your stupid petty fights. And they were miserable, the whole. But so that was bad.
So the rabbi laid into him in front of everybody.
Yeah, at the ceremony, which is like, you guys are stupid and childish and you need to grow up. And it was crazy. And then the rest of the reception, they were pissed. He broke her gown at one point. We had to sew her. It was like a nightmare. I don't think there's no way they could still be married. If I had to bet money right now, there's no way I can see those two still married.
Okay.
You just can't say stuff like that to someone on your wedding day. To me. Like, no. You shouldn't say stuff like that at all, but especially on your wedding day. The other one was in Alabama, and I used to work at Target Portrait Studio.
Yeah.
And they came in for their engagement pictures. And then they called and they go, our wedding photographer has cancer. Can you shoot our wedding?
Yeah.
And I felt bad for them. So it's one of those like you. And I'm like, they go, we've already spent all of our money for the wedding. So we don't have any money, right? Yep. We don't have any money left. Is there any way that you'll help us out? And I said, sure. Why don't you just pay me whatever you can? Or I said something stupid like that. And it was one of those where it was no money. I think maybe they paid me. I don't want to say it was like $50. Maybe they gave me like, but 2 weeks later, by the way, that was super late. What happened is that they had already been together for 12 years and had 2 children. I didn't know that at the time.
Oh, okay.
And everything she's ever seen about weddings, she wants to do at her wedding, but they had no, like, lots of plans and no execution. Mm-hmm. So, like, there was a box of pears that said a perfect pear, but no one handed them out, so they were, like, out there. Then there were bells that were supposed to get handed out that nobody picked up except the bride's mother.
So she didn't have, like, a wedding planner or anything.
No, she was just freelancing everything. Yeah. Right? They had a fountain in the middle.
Or just a friend, a sister. Anyone.
They had a fountain in the middle of the church that was spewing water on the aisle. Anyway, and at one point in the service, they said, ring your bells in jubilation, and only the mother bride's like, ding a ding a ding a ding. So then her cousin had died.
What was up?
Oh, yeah. Her cousin had died when she was, a teenager. And so she decided to make her cousin her honorary bridesmaid.
Yeah.
And so in order to do that, she handed a bouquet of flowers to her aunt without telling her aunt that this was going to happen. So her aunt is like, my baby's dead. She's dead. And now she's an honorary bridesmaid. She's falling out.
Oh, what? My gosh. So because she just she didn't know, and she's losing it.
Yeah. So they didn't say, hey, we're going to make your daughter an honorary bridesmaid, and we're going to hand you a bouquet during the ceremony so you could emotionally prepare yourself.
Yeah.
They just sprung it on her. And then there's so many parts of this wedding. So then really fast, when we were getting the portraits, they had silk on top of plywood, and it wasn't nailed down anywhere. So we'd slide right on it. So I was trying to fix a bridesmaid's dress, and I stepped and slid and fell forward and grabbed what I thought was a column, which wasn't attached to the ground.
Oh my gosh.
It hit a candelabra, which sent lit candles flying, and then the back of it hit the back of my back. And if the videographer had had his camera running, I swear to God, we would have made money on America's Funniest Videos. It was the most biggest fiasco. So now I've got live fire. I got hit by the arch. The bride screams, "This is a sign from Jesus that we shouldn't get married." I'm like,
no. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. No.
And I didn't have any Advil. And my back is killing me. I go, "Does anybody have any Tylenol?" And one of the bridesmaids is like, "I'm not giving you nothing. You don't ruin the wedding." I'm like, oh.
Oh, my God.
Anyways, I still get married, but this is the best part, too. The pastor... The pastor says during the prayer, he goes, "Right now, Lord, we just ask that you bless this wedding and take away the temptation of the other women that have plagued this relationship."
Oh,
What? He literally just called out the groom for cheating on the bride at the wedding.
Wow.
I looked up from the camera like, is anybody else hearing this? It was a wild, wild, wild wedding.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where was this one?
Alabama.
Alabama. Sounds okay. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah.
We just ask you spare him from the plague of the other women.
Wow. That is so crazy. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I know. I never thought I would get married. I was never the person who ever wanted to, needed to.
Yeah.
Saw it. But I remember I was like, I photographed one of my friend's childhood friend's wedding, and she married a really rich guy. And they were very wealthy. They had a giant house and a couple kids. And the whole time I'm shooting, I'm like, God, what did I do with my life? Like, you know, you ever question, like, you think you're fine. Yeah. And then you're like, I live in a small apartment. Like, I just have a dog. Like,
oh, yeah.
And you're like,
all the time.
Oh my gosh, what did I do wrong? I should have married a rich, she's got her life together.
If I had spent the $70,000 I spent on higher education on plastic surgery, I could have a whole different life right now.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm like, so I was kind of thinking that and stuff. And then I'm photographing their wedding and I just asked them, you know, to come over here and pose, normal stuff. And the groom just hothead, lost it on me for telling him what to do. And, I mean, I stayed calm. I just was like, it's not my wedding. I mean, this is not my problem.
Or don't pose. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, or don't. Or you don't have to be in the photos. You know, it's not your day. It's not, you know what I mean? So I was just, he lost his temper. She had to go chase him down. He, yelled at me. I didn't do, I was just doing my job.
I got yelled at by a groom one time, too. And yeah. I'm still sour about it.
When they lose it on me, when I'm like, I
know. I'm here making all your shit happen.
Yeah.
Sorry. Literally, it's a guy said, at a wedding, and I liked the bride very much. I liked him until this moment. He goes, "Can you just give us a minute? Can you just leave for a minute?"
Oh yeah,
it's like, and I really? Was like, "Bruh, I'm not super duper interested in being in every. I'm just doing my job that you paid me to. I don't know. I'm still not. I still feel a little twingy about it. I think
had a lot of part of the male ego is the reason, a lot of big reason I'm not doing it because I can't handle it anymore.
Yeah,
Anyways, but I came back and I my parents were there because I grew up with her and I met my parents for breakfast the next morning and I was like, I was really questioning my life until I saw that and I was like, holy shit, I have a great life. I don't have to deal with any of that. I love my life all of a sudden. What was I thinking? I'm like, there's always a price to pay with just...
Totally.
Sometimes you think the grass is greener and you're like, oh no, I don't have to deal with that.
And I really have a chip on my shoulder. I'm getting over it because I see so many marriages that haven't worked out now in my own friendship circle. But I always had a chip on my shoulder that, no one's ever invited me to ruin the rest of their life. That's, this line that I use. Sometimes you shoot weddings and the bride is horrible.
Yeah.
A total jerk. And then you're like, how come this perfectly lovely gentleman is marrying this total jerk?
Or that, too. Yeah, you're really?
So one of my favorite stories was my assistant or partner or whatever. We were doing a wedding where they had the sand ceremony, and if you're not savvy, you do these two different colors of sand, and you pour them in. The whole idea is that now our sand is mixed, and we can never come undone. This lady was such a jerk. My assistant goes, "I will bring a six-pack to his house and a pair of tweezers, and we will get him out of this. This is the worst woman I've ever met." I was laughing so hard.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the level. That's how bad she was. Everyone was like, "We will just pick it grain by grain, baby,
we can get you
out of here. This is insanity.
Let's get you out."
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so funny.
I don't know.
Do you ever have a morbid bucket list when you do weddings? When I started, I was like, okay, I can't wait for my first divorce when I find out. I can't wait for my first
someone dramatic, to die.
Or like, or no, like dramatic breakup at the day of. Oh, yeah. Or, you know.
You slept with my bridesmaid, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I just have bucket lists. Or like, obviously, like, you know, first one to have kids. But that happens so fast. That's like, okay. Yeah. That was on the, you know, you just, I just have these bucket lists. My first, you know, at a country wedding. And
first
just
time
like,
seeing one of your wedding people in a Pornhub video after.
That would be a good one. Yeah.
No. I know that groom.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
He's still wearing the ring, so I guess.
Yeah. So funny. I know. And then when you go down the bucket list, you're like, yes. Like, I felt bad. Like, or my favorite one was, like, first got a divorce and then got remarried and hired me again.
Mm-hmm. That's half off your next wedding. Yep. That's what I always tell it's people. Like,
all right.
Repeat customers. You know what's funny is, yeah, you. It's sort of a weird schadenfreude, isn't it? Because you... I think what I liked about weddings, or what I still like about them, is being able to walk anywhere you want. You don't have to sit where the guests are sitting and do what they want you to do. You get to get up and walk anywhere at any time and be and look at all the things and meet all the vendors and get the whole backstory. And I don't like following rules, so that part of wedding photography is really fun.
Yeah, you know, same. Yeah.
And you get to wink at the caterer and get like extra whatever.
Oh, yeah. You get to walk around, be at the party. It's a big party that you're documenting.
That's what I love. So it's usually the biggest party people will ever throw, wearing the nicest clothes they're ever going to wear, looking the prettiest they probably will ever look. And you get to shoot
too
it.
Much it's for, really fun. I just can't believe it's just too much. It's too much for me. That's crazy.
Yeah?
I got married in the backyard.
I do think the longer I shoot weddings, the smaller my wedding would ever get. If I really, if you asked me today if I'd get married, I would say I don't think so.
Really? Yeah.
Maybe if someone had cancer and needed insurance or something. Like, yeah. You know, maybe if there was, and I don't know that I would do, I do love a good party though. I've always thought it'd be fun to throw a party.
The party is the best part.
Yeah.
Not the, like, everything has to be perfect, because that's too stressful. That's when, like, stressful. The money dump, the, like, too, it's just too much.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Ugh, like, some people get too, I think the best weddings are the ones where the bride's like, whatever happens, happens.
I tell every bride that I interview, as long as you're marrying the right guy, the rest doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, it really doesn't.
Nope.
And no one knows what you have plans. If it doesn't work out, nobody knew.
I mean, they're too busy staring at the open bar and, like, eating the food and just chilling. Most people don't care.
Yeah, it's fine. It's a good party. But, yeah, I enjoy the idea of weddings for sure. Like, I enjoy the romantic ideal of them. And people wearing dresses is always fun. We don't have enough excuses to dress up these days, I think.
I know. We should just dress up for fun. I love it.
I used to wear a bridesmaid's dress on stage.
Oh, yes.
Because I've been a bridesmaid a whole bunch of times.
But and never
would,
the bride.
Yeah, and I'd get on the stage and I'd go, they told me I could wear this again. And I would just stare at the audience until people got it. I haven't done that in forever because I lost a bunch of weight. Chad Daniel, I used to have this thing where I over-introduce myself to comedians because I imagine they're so famous, they probably forget who I am.
Yeah.
So Chad Daniels, I was like, hi, I'm Wendy Mayberry. And he goes, yeah, I'll never forget a comedian that wears a bridesmaid's dress on stage. And I'm like, cool, all right, we're good. So
I love that.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
I should bring it back. It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels nice to be dressy. It felt like Rita Rutner-ish, you know.
I love it. And yeah, those are expensive dresses.
They're really expensive to wear not very often again, ever, truly.
No.
I hate how when you have a pretty friend and they fall in love, it costs you a bunch of money.
I know.
It's very irritating.
I know. That's why I don't have...
Pretty friends.
Pretty friends.
All your friends are just kidding. Never going
to
get
married. I get really close to them, and then I'm like, I just want you to know we're not that close, okay?
That's hilarious. Don't ever ask me to be a bridesmaid. Yeah, have you ever been a bridesmaid?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah, no, my best friend got married, and yeah, it's a lot.
Was it fun?
No, of course it's fun. But it's just like so much. I feel like it's more pressure on me than it was on her to have to help do everything. But, you know,
yeah,
it was great. I love
it. Well, you want it for them, too. You know, you want your friends to be happy.
Yeah.
And, like, you do the things like, oh, I need these flowers to look good. Like, you know. Like, I remember I shot a wedding once and the bride had hives. She was so stressed out. And then her bouquet looked terrible. It was like a corsage on a Bible. It was supposed to be a spray on a Bible. And it looked like a... It looked like a prom corsage. It was like two roses and a little bit of baby's butt. It was horrible looking. And it had a stupid elastic band around the body. It just looked bad. And that's the day I discovered that our job is to lie to the bride. Everyone's like, does it look great? And everyone's like, yeah. Because there was no way to. And she's like, it looks amazing. And I was like, I was the photographer. If I had been her friend, I would have been ripping things apart from other bouquets and making it look
you
great.
You have to, because what can you do, I guess, right?
I think that's where everyone was
at. No, but Yeah, if you were a good friend, you would have just made it, like, figured it out.
Yeah. But everyone was lying to her, like, yeah, it's great. Everything's great. And I was like, no, it's not great.
Yeah, my friend's wedding, since I know we always get in trouble, like, we're, like, we party. We're, like, good friends. We always like to party. But I don't know why. She told me I wasn't allowed to speak. She was afraid I was going to say just a bunch of stuff about her.
Oh my gosh.
So I wasn't allowed. I don't know why, actually, to this day. I'm like, I don't know why.
I love that.
But the groomsmen, so the person that she had to speak, he had, like, it was just this long thing that he was going to read, and on his phone, and it died right before. It just died. And I looked at him, and he goes, and then since I was, like, the maid of honor, the best man didn't know I wasn't speaking, and he just handed the mic to me, and the other guy's phone died, and I had nothing prepared, which was fine, but I looked at him and I just smiled at her. I'm like, yeah, it was great. But no, the speech was really great. And she was like, wow, I'm glad you did that. That was really great. And I'm like,
yeah,
duh.
Like, on me.
What did you think I was going to say? Yeah. I was like, you doubt me. But it
turned out. That amazes me when your friends do that.
I know.
I didn't know you were good at that. I'm like,
well, yeah. I know more about you, and you, like, you think I would be like, oh yeah, she drinks a lot, pukes over that, like, that time you like, I'm not gonna tell your family that.
Yeah,
of course, man. Dignity.
Wing woman. yeah, exactly. I got your back, you.
Yeah. So that. But no, weddings are great. I love it. Big party. I just don't like the pressure of some of them. Sometimes I'm like.
Has being married been good?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's just like dating, but now, you know, you share things like health insurance and finances, and you get a party, you go on a little vacation, and it's like back to dating.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. All right, I have a question that no one on the podcast, what are the gnome hats about?
Oh,
you have two gnome hats.
I have
a little
two gnome hats sitting here. Yeah, so before Joe and I were dating, we would, like, we didn't know. Well, I think he knew he liked me. I didn't know I liked him. Mm-hmm. But we would find excuses to hang out. So we had, like, a little break. So we went and got ice cream and, like, went for a walk. And somebody had those free hats, and we both just, like, wore them around.
Aww,
yeah, it's so goofy.
I love that he is goofy around you.
Yeah.
I love that that's really cool. Because sometimes I think when you have a comedian, I don't know if people always embrace the goofiness, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so you seem to have these weird two lives where they're, like, funny on stage, and then they're kind of, like, not allowed to be that way at home. So.
Well, I don't think he's as an off switch. I don't think he knows how to be not a comedian.
Aww.
Like, I don't. God. Yeah, I have a lot of friends who do comedy or just a bunch of stuff, but a lot of my comedian friends have off switches at times, but I've never seen that in him.
You know, like, I think you get in trouble though, because, like, I use jokes obviously as a healthy defense mechanism, but my mom has just had a really serious health diagnosis, mm-hmm. and she was like, I don't want to be a burden, and I'm like, oh, you've always been a burden, just not physically, and no one thought that was funny.
Like, I think that's funny.
I did too. I was like, I thought that was.
It's like, I love, you're always like, it's cute, it's sweet.
I love that. It was too soon. I got a lot of faces like, no. I'm like, okay.
That's funny. So, okay, so comedy, how did you get into comedy? Because you've done photography for.
Ever. Since, like, yeah. 14 years at the time when I started comedy. So I got out of photography school in 2000. So now I've been a photographer for 23 years, officially educated. Comedy, I found, do you find when you shoot people that you're always disarming them, mm-hmm. right? So when you photograph people, you're trying to get them to smile and get them to open up. It's this very same skill as comedy, mm-hmm. right? And I didn't realize I was sort of practicing comedy for years in the scope of photography. And photography is also telling a story, right?
Yeah.
So you're doing the same that you're observing. You're looking for funny stuff. And so it's kind of, weirdly, people don't think about how much they are very married up as far as, like, the skill sets that you do both of them. They're obviously different jobs, but the skills are very similar. So I just decided, it was very cold in Minnesota that first summer first winter when I moved here. And so I didn't have any friends, so that I would try it at Acme. I didn't understand that it's a writing job as much as making people laugh.
Yeah.
So I went on stage and actually quoted an SNL skit. I went, Doubt Bears, right? Which you don't really do in stand-up. You don't really borrow punchlines from SNL. But no one, I didn't really understand the mechanics of it. I was just excited about getting on stage and trying an open mic because everyone had told me to do it. And I was always like, no, I'm a photographer. I'm not a comedian. I would never do that.
Yeah.
And then I just was like, screw it. I don't know anyone here. I'll just try it and see if it worked. And so the first time I got off stage, some guy offered me $250 to come do a stand-up at their house in North Minneapolis in the basement. And most every other comedian who knows what they're doing would be like, no thanks. And instead I was like, yeah. Like, so I did a show in the basement of somebody's house for $250. I think the weekend after I first went on stage ever.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did that go?
It's terrible. We laugh about it because Boyma Freeman is a Twin Cities comedian, and I just photographed his headshots, and we were talking about it because it was a black man and a white woman, and they had hired a black comedian and a white female comedian to do, like, kind of to mirror and to do, like, a battle of the sexes or whatever. Boyma had already been a comedian for 8 years, and he knew what he was doing. And I am a dirty comic, but next to Boyma, I sound like, back in St. Olaf, I used to, like, I just sounded like the whitest, oldest lady, and he was, like, totally cool and amazing. And so she said, you guys could dress in costume. It's a Halloween party. So I had called Boyma, and I said, hey, what costumes do you want to wear? And he said, I'll be a pimp, you be a hoe. And I went, okay. So I wore fishnets that were ripped. I had a black eye. I had, like, a mini skirt. I had, like, all kinds of, I looked like I'd got torn up, you know? And I showed up, and the woman looked at me, and she went, oh, are you okay? What happened? And I'm like, this is my costume. And Boyma came out, and he was wearing regular clothes.
Oh, my gosh.
And he goes, yeah, I forgot I said that. I'm like, you jerk. Oh, my gosh. Like, so I looked horrible. Like,
That's hilarious.
Oh, totally. And the best part is they paid me in his bedroom in fives. It's $250 in fives because he's a pizza delivery guy. And then I lived in Richfield at the time. I actually lived on 62 and Penn, or 66 and Penn, actually.
Oh, yeah, right over here.
Right around the corner from where you live. And I went to the Byerly's on Penn, and I literally pulled out the wad of fives in my fishnets and bought a Martha Stewart magazine and a Honeycrisp apple. And the lady's like, because I look like I have just been assaulted. And she's like, are you, what is, you have a wad of bills and a black eye and you're buying a Honeycrisp apple and a Martha Stewart magazine. Wait, like, what is happening?
So right, funny.
So yeah, it was okay. The mic didn't work very well. It was the kind of gig that now as a comedian I'd be like, oh god, this is a horrible idea.
Yeah,
but at the time I was just so excited that anyone wanted to hear me talk.
Oh my gosh, so. That's so fun. I love that story.
Yeah, when I felt really bad, though, when she saw me, went, oh, what happened to you? I'm like, oh, this is a costume party.
Oh, my gosh.
She thought I just looked really awful. And somebody else was having a domestic on my car, so we were leaving. I had to ask the people to stop fighting on my car. I'm like, I need to go. Can you guys? Because they were having a big boyfriend-girlfriend fight on my car.
That's weird.
It was a very weird night. But I was hooked. Right? Yeah, I was like.
Yeah, I mean, that happens.
Now I can't stop. And then I moved to North Minneapolis. So I actually moved to, when I bought my first house, I bought it in North. And that's cool.
Have you always been extroverted where you can easily talk to people? And
if you do the personality test, I am like 100% extroverted.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, it is, but people get tired of it.
Really?
Like, I've had coworkers be like, we get it. You're funny. Please stop talking. Like, yeah, they just are over it after a while. Huh. So I've had to learn as I've gotten older to let other people have the best story in the room, even if I've heard of a better story.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's nice to feel like the rock star.
Yeah.
So even if I've heard someone tell a better story than that, like, this is, you could have that story. Like, I have to actively tell myself to tone it down a little bit because not everyone does, you know what I mean? Like, it's not nice to always be the person sucking all the oxygen off in the room. So I try really hard to be aware, but I'm not always successful at it. So I do think about it.
So how many years have you been doing comedy now?
Now I've been doing comedy since, like, 2012.
Okay.
It's like, 12 or 13 years. I have an album out, and I released that during the pandemic, and I'm talking to my record label about doing the next album.
And you have a book.
I have a book out, which is weird. I have two books, actually. So one book is The Gig Diary, and that's for comedians to track their gigs and how much they made and who hired them and if it was shitty or not and who opened for them. And it's really good. I think it's a good tool.
Wait, tell me about this. Is this what you did and then you kind of are helping other comedians, or is it something you came up with?
It's a tool that I knew I needed, and then I published it on Amazon for people to buy. Cool. So I said, like, it has, like, the venue, you can give it an overall star rating, you can rate all the different aspects of your performance? And then, like, did you drink water? Did you drink alcohol? Did you work out? Are you in a good place? Did you take your meds? Did you, like, whatever your routine is, did you do it? And then you can tell how you did. Then you write your set list and how you did.
Cool.
So it's, you can kind of figure out, like, this joke I've done 6 times and no one, I think it's funny, no one has laughed. I either need to rework it or stop telling it, or, like, I can see I had 3 bad sets and I also didn't drink any water, or I didn't get the right amount of sleep or whatever. So you can start to kind of optimize your own.
God.
Yeah.
Being on all the time when you, or, like, being on when you have to be, and, like, planning, isn't that kind of a, like, a whole, I guess, art in itself.
You know, I read a lot about what other comics do, and Chris Rock had said he takes the day of a performance, the entire day you're working, because the prep before you get on stage should be part of the job. Mm-hmm. Like the sleeping, the nap, the all those things are something. So it's not just I arrived at the venue and I got on stage. It's like, what did I do the 4 hours before to make sure when I get on stage, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I published this thing, and hopefully I've heard people are using it and it's helpful, but just to sort of do it in a more thoughtful, consistent, professional way, rather than I got on stage and it sucked, or I got on stage and it was great. Well, why? Because the hallmark of a professional is repeatable result, right?
Like, yeah.
I know I can get on stage. I know I will hit, whether I'm in a good mood, a bad mood.
Yeah.
I can do my job.
Yeah.
So I made that tool for that. So that's the Gig Diary, and it's on Amazon, and it's in 2 different, you know, hardcover, softcover, 6x9 or 8.5x11. I designed them all.
Oh my gosh.
And then I also wrote a book on marketing for comedians, because the reality is for comics right now is that we used to be the club system, and a lot of clubs have gone out of business since COVID. So it really is about your own self-promotion, and that's a totally different skill set than writing jokes.
Mm-hmm.
So, but a lot of folks have no idea how the algorithm works and how you get people to pay attention to stuff on Facebook. So if you do an engaging post, like, so Facebook will push down a post that has a link for the tickets.
Yeah.
But if you do something super engaging and a lot of people see it, and then you do the post about your show, more people are going to see your show about your post, or a post about your show, than they would have if you hadn't done an engaging thing before that.
So you can't just be a comedian. You got to be a social. Well, you can be good at marketing.
You can just be a comedian if you don't want to make any money at it.
Right? Sure. I know. Exactly. Isn't that crazy? Like, we all, like, that's, it's just like everything. You have to know how to market yourself.
Every small business needs a marketing arm now, because it's such a noisy world we live in.
Yeah.
And it used to be you would just go to the Yellow Pages and you would just call the plumber.
Yeah.
And now you search on a website that actively pays people to have their results be in front of your eyes, right? So you have to be tactical about it. So it's different. It's a different world. I think that you can certainly, I mean, if all these comedians are talking about Matt Rife, right? Because he posted all these crazy videos and they went viral, and now he booked his own tour. But that is literally, if you can get fans, if you can get 100 people to show up for you in 6 different cities, you have a tour.
Mm-hmm.
You just call a venue, like a restaurant, like you're doing your business now. Call a restaurant and say, hey, you guys can seat 150. Can I have it on a Tuesday night? And if you have enough pull to sell tickets, you can do a night in Cincinnati and then a night in West Virginia and a night in Virginia, and, you know, and just kind of go down the Eastern Seaboard and making your own comedy tour. And you could do that.
Do you do that?
That's the next goal.
Okay.
So I quit my day job last March, which was very scary for a single mom.
There you go.
Oh, thanks. Oh, that's the first thing I said to get an applause break. That's hilarious. We went, hold on, how are we going? Like an hour. An hour. It's like, oh, finally, something I can be excited about. No one loves you. Cheers, I can't do that. Like, it's hilarious. So I quit my day job. So now it's all just being an artist. So now I'm working on it. Next summer, I think when Grayson's out of school, I'd like to take him on a tour. And I think that's how we're going to do it.
Fun.
Yeah.
You know what you need?
Tell me.
A tour dog.
I do need a tour. We need a tour dog.
Because I know you said you can't travel with pets, but if you're bringing your son,
he would love it.
He would love a companion.
It could be his guardian during the hour and a half I'm on stage.
Go get a service.
Doberman?
Service dog vest for him.
Yeah.
And then just say it's my son's service dog.
Oh, I can't do that. I'd have to have him certified. He could be an emotional.
Oh, no, you can get it certified, but that's what
Yeah, do a certified dog. Be like, it's my son's emotional support animal.
Yeah, or just babysitter when I'm gone. Yeah, get a really fierce one.
He would really love to have, like, an emotional support, like, sloth or guinea pig or goose or some other random animal.
I just carry emotional support coffee everywhere.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. This is my coffee. I can't let go of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that, I would like to do a tour. I had started a show called Day Drinking with Mom, and I think it'd be really fun to do a Day Drinking with Mom tour. Or we'll see. So, yeah. That's what I think the goal is, right? Because then you can kind of decide your own destiny. And that was the whole reason I quit my day job. I was like, hey, I'll have 9 more summers with my kid before he's an adult. and I don't want to spend it being managed on how I can use my time.
Yeah.
I really want to be present. Although I will tell you, it is very hard because, like, managing having a 9-year-old and trying to get the stuff done that you need to do for your job and having him feel like you're not ignoring him is very
So, tough. Yeah, do you include him in your work sometimes? Like, okay, we're going on a little adventure. We're doing this.
Yeah, he's old enough now. I have always done that, actually, I think, actually, when he's able to do it. When he was a little baby, he would come to the comedy club and just stay in his baby seat and sleep in the back. And I've actually had him on stage at the 10,000 Laughs Fest.
Fun.
I wore him. And Mike Brody said the best joke ever. Was wearing him. He slept through my set. When I got off stage, Mike Brody went on stage and said, "Give it up for Wendy Mayberry, the worst ventriloquist ever. That dummy didn't say shit." I'm like, oh. And that was way funnier than anything I remember saying. He's a funny guy. So, yeah, I have had him. But, you know, he's 9, so I don't really need him to be around other comedians' material as much. And, you know, usually comedy's done in places with alcohol. And
yeah.
So it's just not a very kid-friendly. When he was a baby and was kind of able to scoot under the radar, that was one thing. Now he's at this prime kid age.
Yeah.
And he needs to be in bed. He can't be out till
right. You got to create a healthy lifestyle for him, too.
Yeah. So it's a little tricky. So I try hard to book first the weekends where he visits his dad. And then I only try to book my weekends if it's a lot of money. Like, you know.
I like how you... This is a side thing. I like how you seem to create boundaries for yourself because you have the tile. That means you've lost your keys and you're just like, now you're like, screw it. I'm just going to like call for it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's that. I think I got a lot of those. As you get older, you start figuring out there's just stuff I'm not good at. I'm probably never going to be good at.
That's what I say. Like anyone who has a tile is giving into the fact that they know that they're just, they know themselves. I'm going to lose my keys. And instead of freaking out. Yeah. So, yeah, I've noticed that. I have one, too, so.
Yeah, they're good. And I will also tell you that this morning, actually, I just got lunch, full disclosure, at Target before I came over, and I just had a shoot yesterday, a big shoot with, like, 5 locations or something, and I threw the lights in the back of the car with the keys, and the car will start if you have the keys in the vehicle. So today when I got out at Target, I'm like, where? And I didn't lock my car last night or the part in the garage. So I didn't actually touch the keys. So anyway, I figured out for the first time that I need my keys at the Target parking lot because I didn't want to leave all of my equipment unlocked in the car.
Yeah.
So I actually had to pull out the photo equipment. At the bottom of the photo equipment was the keys.
Oh, my gosh.
So, anyway, because I'm like, they have to be in here. They drove here. So, yeah, I think I have too much stuff in my brain.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens. Yeah. I get that.
So it's nice when people can help you with that. I don't know. Or not make fun of you.
Yeah.
She's busy.
Well, yeah. You're smart. You have a lot going. You got a lot of plates spinning.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people. Here's something I always wonder about. I hear people say it's not great to do so many things because it's hard to understand what you're doing. If you do just one thing and you're known for one thing, everyone gets like, oh, Britley does this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard when you love so many things and life is short to not try to do all the things.
Yeah. I have a hard time trying to be a brand for somebody to see because I'm just like, no, now I'm over here, now I'm doing this, now I'm doing that. But yeah, I know
it's tough, and I get criticisms for that, but I also feel I don't care.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm bummed for you that it's hard to understand me.
I know, and when I see you and I follow you, so I always get your posts and stuff, so and I'm like, I get it, like, I see you're doing a lot of things that if somebody else can't get it or like understand like what you are, it's like, well, that's because you are a narrow thinker.
Yeah, because but it's always that weird grass is always greener, right? Because I get a lot of people going, oh my gosh, you're so brave to do so many things. And I'm like, sometimes I just want to be an accountant.
Me too. I've been like, I dream about that. Or just one job.
One job. In a cube, I get a certain amount of money, and I'm cool with it. And then when I go home, I'm done working.
And yeah. Yes, and then you get to relax, and then you go on your fun little vacations, and then you know how much money you're making.
Someone else can cover for you.
It's your money doesn't go like this with whatever you're doing. It goes like this.
I just did my year-end projection for my photography business, and I was just talking with someone. They were like, well, don't forget you have to squirrel away a bunch of stuff for January, February, because January, February is really dead for photography generally, unless you're doing newborns. But that's a good time for comedy. So anyway, they were just sort of we were just looking at the year end, thinking we have to end up the year with enough to carry us through January, February, before it starts again in March.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot to think about.
I know. I'm always thinking, I'm always like fearing winter because that's when things slow down. I'm like, am I doing enough in the summer? Because all the jobs are now and all the things are now. And I'm like, am I going to have enough money to like handle the winter coming up? I don't know. Is my car going to break down? Am I going to get stuck in the snow? What's going to happen?
It is a little scary, isn't it? I definitely think, and that's, we artists, I feel a little jealousy about other countries that might have a guaranteed wage, or just the idea that you have health insurance or retirement. It's sort of really, it's great when capitalism works for some people, but it's really brutal, especially if you have mental health challenges or you have long-term physical challenges that require medical care.
Yeah.
Like, your options for freedom of expression are very limited.
I know.
You know, because you have to have a job to have a certain amount of health insurance. So
I know. It stinks.
Yeah. It's really definitely a different reality than some folks are used to.
Yeah. So this is a food-based podcast.
Yeah.
And I asked you your favorite foods.
Oh, yeah.
So Jägerschnitzel
yeah.
is the one that I thought was pretty, like, good, because I love German food.
We're going to do it.
Yeah, so I'm excited. We're going to have some at the Black Forest, I believe they yes. have it. So tell me about it. Tell me why you love it. Tell me.
Okay, so my grandmother is from Austria, okay. and but beyond that, I was an exchange student in Germany.
Oh.
And I lived there for a year when I was 16. And there was a lot of German food I did not like. Like, one time this guy was eating a food, and I'm like, my favorite thing was to say, "What animal is this? Make the noise of the animal this is. Now show me on your body what part of the animal I am eating." Because, like, it was like sour calf lung soup one time when I had like beef tongue, and I'm like, no.
Yeah.
But Jägerschnitzel is traditionally it's veal, but you can also get different cuts of meat, pounded down very thin, dredged in flour, cooked, sort of like chicken fried steak if you're an American, right? Mm-hmm. And then they have, but it's in a very, it's delicate pan fried, so it's easy to cook because it's been pounded down, so it doesn't take very long in the pan. And then you make a mushroom cream sauce.
Yeah, oh. I love mushroom cream sauce.
Me too. We had mushroom cream sauce. And then traditionally you can get it french fries, or you can cook it with or Spätzle. Spätzle is the German dumplings that they make. And they have Käsespätzle. You can have Käsespätzle with a little bit of onion and a little bit of bacon, maybe. It's really delicious.
Yum.
And my favorite thing to have is a Radler. A Radler is a German, it's a shandy. So it's beer and like lemonade or beer and Sprite, which makes it, and they call it that because it's a bicyclist. You could have a couple and still ride your bike.
Oh, okay.
And not be super drunk. That's what the name comes from. So yeah, I like Radlers because I'm not a huge beer fan.
That's what shandy is?
Yeah.
That's why every time you see shandy, they're on a bike. Aren't
yes.
they? And like uh-huh. most, okay.
Yep, because they're made for bike riders, both in England and Ireland. They call it, that's what you drink when you're riding a bike, so you don't get super drunk.
Oh, that's fun.
If you're going to get super drunk, you drive a car, clearly.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
I don't know what that is. But anyway, that's Jägerschnitzel, and it's one of my favorite, like, typical. It's also easy to find in German restaurants. It's a very typical German dish.
Okay.
The other thing I like is Rindsroulade, and that is where you put pickle. It's very much a pickle, bacon, onion, rolled in a pounded beef filet.
Ooh.
And then you cook it in a roll. A little bit of mustard, and then you roll it up, and then you have another big sauce with it. It's really delicious.
Yum.
It's really, really good. So it's a little bit of that acid of the pickle, and a little bit of the bacon, salt, and then...
That sounds really good.
It's quite
good
as well.
I love all of those
things.
And
my grandmother used to make it, and she was something else, so she'd go to the butcher and like be like, "Nein, I need the thing with the thing with the rindle, and it has to be like this," and then we, you know, and she'd like, yeah, because American butchers don't usually make that way.
Yeah.
And so she would have to school them on how to cut the cow to make the right. My grandmother was very...
Oh, is she German?
She's Austrian.
Or Austrian, yeah. That's right.
I always say, in any of my comedy, I say Germany. Because if you say Austrian, Americans will think Australian.
Australian, yeah.
And they don't get that Austria is just next to Germany, and they're kind of the same people.
Very similar.
As my grandmother doesn't want to remind everyone, Hitler was from Austria. He was not a German. You know, he was Austrian.
Oh,
did you know that?
No.
Oh, yeah. Hitler's Austrian. This is something that all the Austrians want you to forget.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was Austrian. And then he took power in Germany.
Oh, wow.
So. Mm-hmm.
That's a fun fact.
Yeah. So, what the Austrians want you to remember is the sound of music.
Yeah, exactly.
That hills are which, by the way, when I went to Germany at 16, we lived in the Alps. And I was like singing that song, spinning around, The Hills Are Alive. They don't have that movie in Germany because they're the bad guys. So I'm like, you know, Sound of Music. And all the Germans are like, excuse me? And I'm like, there's this movie. Oh, yeah. You guys probably don't have that one because you're the bad guys.
Yeah, that's so funny.
There's a lot of movies they didn't release in Germany because they're the bad guys.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
It is a different cultural perspective. And then when I went to East Germany, they had maps. Like, so right now, Brettley has this map of the United States, and you can see Mexico and you can see Canada. But in East Germany, if you were looking across the border, it was just grayed out because they didn't want you to know if there's a town or a river, or because you couldn't escape during the Cold War.
Yeah.
So right when the wall came down is when I was an exchange student. And so I would go in and see kids my age. They had no idea what was over the wall. Like, it was like there'd be dragons because, you know, they didn't want you to...
Like a new world discovery because they never saw it on the map. Wow.
That's very weird.
Wild.
So, yeah, it was kind of wild. So, and I felt really lucky to be able to get to experience that.
Yeah. You've been all over.
I have been very lucky that way. Like, I think that's the being a military kid and starting out overseas was really cool.
Yeah.
And then there's only, I have three more states and I'm done.
Really?
All of them. Yeah.
Really? And what are the three?
It is. Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming.
Montana?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Can't wait to go.
Yeah.
I grew up on the East Coast, so I did all these, but that is like...
Cool. So what's your favorite in the United States so far?
Favorite state?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, Hawaii. When I landed in Hawaii, I went, oh, my God.
Oh, I bet.
And that's Alaska, gorgeous. Too. I just went to Alaska this year, and Alaska was like super cool. And
two gorgeous places.
Where else? Those were really impressive. Well... The New England in the fall is really amazing. My parents live on a beach in Florida, Panama City Beach, and it is the whitest sand and the green water. And it is truly one of the prettiest beaches I've ever seen.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I like Virginia. Virginia, where I'm from, is really great because you have big cities, small towns, mountains, history. D.C.'s right there, all within like, you know, an hour drive.
What is Virginia known for food?
Okay, peanuts.
Interesting.
Because peanuts kind of came in there, so roasted peanuts. And all it's like the top of Southern cooking. So any of the, biscuits. So the whole South is kind of known for that same sort of, like, deep fried, like, fried green tomatoes and biscuits and gravy and kind of, like, but Virginia is a little more highbrow about it because, you know, presidents are from there and stuff, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ham. The ham. Smithfield
ham. Virginia ham.
Yeah, Virginia ham. I'm trying to think what else we have. But yeah. Oh, the funny thing is, I just started selling maple syrup since I moved up here for my son for to camp. And I was in Georgia visiting a friend, and he went, oh, syrup. Is that the one from bees? I'm like, no, that's honey. Like, syrup is from trees. So our trees don't do that in the South.
Oh, really?
No, weird. Because it never gets, in order for sap to run, it has to freeze at night and be above freeze in the daytime. So we don't make maple syrup in the South at all. So we only usually have the really crappy brown corn syrup with the flavor.
Yeah, with the...
Yeah, because maple syrup, to get it down there, costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a whole different thing that you guys have up here.
Oh, it's like our wasabi.
Yeah, exactly. Yes!
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's wasabi's all horseradish. Yeah. I actually went to New York City to a Japanese market in Brooklyn and bought some actual wasabi.
You could do that?
Yes, they have it there. And it was a big thing because I was, like, researching it. But, yeah.
Oh, how does it taste?
It was fine. It tasted like horseradish. Like, I mean, it was fine. It was okay.
It's very similar?
Yeah, they have a paste. They have wasabi paste. You can make it. Or they actually have the root.
Okay.
And so I got both because I wasn't sure which one would be better and brought it back to have my friends taste it. And it wasn't something where they were like, oh, my God, we can only eat real wasabi now. It wasn't that.
Okay.
You know, sometimes you have an ingredient and you're like,
now you know. You can't go back. Yeah.
Kind of. Like maple syrup is that way for me. Once you have real maple syrup.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you can't go back.
You can't eat that crap anymore. And I grew up on that. I never really liked it because it always tasted kind of fake.
Like sugar. It's just cornstarch. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just, but the flavor of maple was kind of cloying. It wasn't like a, and now that I had like warm maple syrup that was just sap a minute ago, and now it's warm maple syrup.
Now the ones you're selling is real, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's made up in where we live in Wisconsin. So I have a friend that has a family that lives on a sugar bush. So we just like have tapped the trees and.
Cool.
So yeah, so it turns out my son, so that's actually another business is they're going to let us white label the syrup for my son to pay for camp.
Cool.
So I'm having labels made right now to start selling that as a merch at my comedy shows.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I might have to buy one. I love maple
syrup. It's delicious. It's absolutely delicious.
Although I don't eat a lot of pancakes, I guess I have to now.
Well, you can cook them. You can use it in lots of stuff.
Yeah.
Because in whiskey, like uses a flavor, any sort of thing. And I also use maple syrup in my tea now. So you're using real sugar.
I guess coffee. I do put in coffee. Yeah.
Yep. And then also salmon with maple glaze, and then carrots can be maple glazed, and then Brussels sprouts taste really delicious with a little bit of it at the end.
Oh my gosh.
There's a lot of things you can cook with syrup that until you have like an abundance of syrup, you don't really do that because it's expensive sugar. But we have a lot of it because we make our own.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So. I'm gonna make some. That sounds great. The carrots, the Brussels.
And the other thing salmon. We love to do is when we go fishing, is we make maple popcorn because then the kids can have it in the boat, and if they spill it off the side of the boat, it doesn't matter because the fish will just eat it. Corn and sugar, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we take as a fishing treat for the kids. Good. Maple popcorn.
Environmentally safe.
Yeah.
Snacks. I like that.
Yeah, it was good. And it's not, and it's funny because it is very much just sugar. So it's funny to hear people say, like, I mean, it's a drug. I'm basically a drug dealer. But they just sort of like, oh, well, I don't know if I can, if, what did someone say? Oh, so my friend that, it's Morley's maple syrup that makes this syrup. He makes a maple root beer. And so I had the maple root beer, which is delicious, and then I had the cotton candy. So he bakes down the syrup till it gets to be sugar crystals and whips it into cotton candy. Those are the two of the other things he makes, right? So we're going to sell the cotton candy, the cinnamon syrup, and the regular syrup. But I was sampling one time for him, and someone's like, oh, I can't have the sugar for the cotton candy, which, by the way, is a tiny little bit of sugar because it's been whipped into cotton candy. So the actual – it's like fluff. It's not really, right? So instead they drank – 2 glasses of the maple of the root beer, and I'm like, that has so much more sugar.
Oh my gosh!
Than the cotton candy, because cotton candy is
it's
whipped up fluff. It's very like you could eat the whole box and maybe have half a teaspoon of sugar.
Yeah,
because it's just. But this has like 17 tablespoons for sure. It's a soft drink.
Yeah.
But they were just like, oh, I can't have sugar. I'll drink the soft drink. And I'm like, do you even know how sugar works?
Oh my gosh!
I didn't say anything because I was happy that they bought it, but.
Yeah, I've worked at restaurants where people say, "Oh, I'm vegan," and then they'll order the cauliflower wings with ranch, and I'm like,
"Yeah,
ranch?"
Yeah,
and they have no idea. I have to inform them that there's dairy and ranch.
Or I'm gluten free, but then they drink a beer.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just a bunch of things.
Yeah, we get weird rules in your head about stuff.
Yeah,
and you just so whatever is fine.
It's okay. I love people. That's why there's comedy, right?
Yeah. If they were all made sense, there'd be nothing to make fun of, for sure.
Exactly. So. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm doing a workshop now. So if you are in the Minnesota area and you want to learn how to be a comedian,
fun.
Come to the workshop. There's actually like now, I think, 8 shows on Wednesday nights in Minneapolis or something. There's a lot of comedy right now. If you're not watching comedy and you live in the Minneapolis area, you're missing out.
Yeah. There's a lot of comedy in Minneapolis, and I think that's great. But we need it like outskirts, don't you think? Like,
oh yeah,
I think people should. We should have more comedy. I don't know. Let's.
Oh, in the suburbs—is that your thing?
Well, even in like the small towns, pockets of Minnesota, they need to start laughing more.
Yeah, me too.
You know.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, I think comedy is out. I had never gone to a comedy show until I started doing stand up because my family was just not people that went to live performances.
Oh yeah.
So I think, I don't know why, but I think maybe they thought like, oh, it's a seedy underground comedy. And there was some culture that's maybe, am I going to be welcome there? Yeah. Is it going to be fun? What will happen? I don't know. So yeah. I would just tell you, if you've ever thought it'd be fun to watch comedy, just go. It's very easy to go to. It's not like the 80s where you're in like a deep, dark club with a brick background and some guy's going to yell at you for being stupid. It's not like that. So.
Yeah, because we did a show in Wilmer.
Yeah.
And a benefit show for my cousin. And... gosh, they're so much fun. The crowd is so different. They're not used to comedy in their small town. And I was like, this needs to happen more often around here.
Because it's fun.
They love it. Yeah.
I do think every time we go to a small town or I perform outside, they're just so grateful that you brought a show there. There's something to do. Mm-hmm. And they're really excited to get out.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
That's fun. So when is your next show tonight?
Tonight I have a show at the Mall of America. It's called Work It Out Wednesday. So we do a workshop from 5 to 7 where people can get up and practice their jokes.
Oh, cool.
Yep. And then the show is at 7:30.
Cool.
And so you can practice your jokes and then get on stage and talk about what you learned.
So do you perform? Do you... is it like people like, so can anybody join and like sign up and then practice and then they perform?
Yeah, I don't have any gatekeeping. If you want to learn stand-up comedy, you absolutely can come and listen and watch and get on stage and practice. And then when you're ready to do a show, we have a nice warm audience for you.
So, cool.
Yeah, it's only week 3. So I've actually hosted the last 2 shows to kind of set the tone.
Yeah.
Going forward, I'd like to turn over those duties as someone who wants to learn how to host, because that's a good skill for a new comic. It's just the first couple of shows I was trying to make sure we're running until we get a set audience, you know, because it's that, as you know, it's very tricky when you're doing regular events to make sure people come. And
yeah, it can be stressful trying to do all that marketing to get people in.
Yeah, it's a lot to get off your couch these days.
Yeah, and I just hate like when I help, because doing a show and setting up a show, I don't want comedians coming to perform for an empty room.
Yeah,
that's like the biggest fear for me, to be like, right. Oh, that's terrible.
Well, there's two reasons, right? One is I have to pay you, and now I've made no money.
Like, well, there's that.
And then there's also the embarrassment of like, oh, I made you drive 3 hours for, you know, Hilda and her husband. They're very happy you're here.
I know.
So, yeah.
And with anything, parties too. You throw a party, you put a lot into it, and then no one shows up. It's just like working in an event that's the most like disheartening thing to see a party. Just no one shows up.
Yeah, that is... I did an event last year, and it was a weekend where people usually... It was the first time they had done it on a weekend where people usually have family plans. And they vastly overestimated how many people would show up.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of resources for very few people. And it was a bummer, because it was going to be a really good event if more people had shown up.
And, yeah, and it's just like... I just think, too, when someone invites you to something... just make an appearance, like get off your couch. If it's like, unless it's like, you know what I mean? Something really, your kid or whatever. But if it's just between you and not wanting to get up, or you wanting to be lazy, like just make an appearance.
Yeah. Even if you're not wearing, like sometimes people have to say, oh, I don't have anything to wear. And I don't, just show up. I don't care.
No one
cares. Just happy to have you.
Exactly.
It's post-COVID world. You can show up in your pajamas and no one's going to say a word to you. Just get there.
I know. So anyways, it was so nice to have you.
It was great to be here.
Thank you for coming. This is such an honor.
That's great to sit with you. We should talk shop sometime.
Yeah. I have a lot of things I want to throw at you, so.
Toss away.
I will.
Okay. Hey, you've been Wendy Mayberry. I still am.
Did you listen to this whole thing, really?
Did you get all the way through this? Oh my God, that one story with the lady that fell over with the candelabra, the worst. If you want to shout out at me on social media, I'm at Wendy May. And if you, but you know what? Why don't I give you something for free? If you made it to the very end and you send me an Instagram message at Wendy May, I'll send you something. How's that?
Hey, and I will too.
Okay.
Yes.
Woohoo.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
I don't know.